We're going to be in Ecclesiastes today. This is our third week in Ecclesiastes. Hello, everybody online. Why don't you say hi, and if you have a prayer request, please feel free. But we're going to be in our third week of Ecclesiastes today, and I have a warning as we go into this passage. I have tried in the past 2 weeks to put a very positive message inside what is a very difficult and at times depressing book. Well, this is not a happy one today. This is a realistic one. And here's the thing, we have to deal with things that bring us smiles and also things that challenge us deeply and profoundly. I have found that my times of growth in my walk with Christ, my times of growth with my walk with my family, my times of growth, my walk with you, are times where I have been challenged and I have not enjoyed those times in the moments. Yet, it's through those challenges, in those moments, where God is doing some great things. In the times of great joy, the times of great triumph, the times of the mountain, as Sandra would say, are not times where I particularly grow. They're not. They're great times. But it's the pressure. I'm going to put some pressure on you today. Not me, but the author of Ecclesiastes. And he begins in starting in chapter 5, starting in verse 1. And you may stand for the reading of God's word, though it is a lengthy one. Begins with a warning. And he says, "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools. For they do not know what they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, in a fool's voice with many words. And when you vow a vow to God, do not delay in paying it, for he will have no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let your mouth lead you not into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity, but God is the one you must fear." The word of the Lord today. You may be seated. There was a man who one day was looking up at the sky. He was looking up at the clouds and all of creation. He was in awe of the work of God. And he was sort of taking it all in, thinking about the greatness of God, when he looked up and said, "God, you are so big. You have done so much. You have lived so long. How long is a million years to you?" God answered, "In my frame of reference, only about a minute." Then the man asked, "God, how much is $1 million to you?" God answered, "To me, it's a penny." Then the man asked one last question, "God, can I have a penny?" God said, "In a minute." "For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity. But God is the one you must fear." It doesn't take long, does it, for us to move from what is eternal to what is passing, does it? From having awe of God right back to our own thoughts and our own ways and our own cares. And it's not wrong to have thoughts and cares. It's especially good to bring those to God. However, However, do we have time? Have we made time for the fear of the Lord? Have we made room for awe? Or has that all left us? We sort of defined the fear of the Lord last week as a way of saying, you know, trust and respect and understanding that God is in control. Then here in our passage today, Ecclesiastes states that the fear of God, the fear of the Lord, is not vanity. It's not hebel. It's not passing away. But the fear of the Lord is of this great weight, this great importance. Proverbs 9:10, which might have been written by the same author, states that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Amen, amen. The fear of the Lord, not a college education, though those are good, right? Not what the world says, that can be very mixed. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now, I've mentioned in the past, there are two kinds of fear. There's good and positive fear, and then there's bad and sort of negative fear. You know, a phobia. I don't like heights. I don't like heights. I change these light bulbs in the chandelier. I'm fine. I try to change the light bulbs just, 2 feet above that? I am sweating bullets. I'm not kidding. I'm even thinking about getting up on a ladder that tall, and I'm like, it's not healthy though, right? The ladder's secure. I actually make it more dangerous with my fear. Seriously, right? You ever see somebody, anybody here scared of spiders? You don't have to raise your hand. Okay. I saw a few honest folks raise their hand, and I've seen people jump with the fear of spiders. They could break their neck. Just a little itty bitty thing, right? Phobia is a negative kind of fear, right? It subtracts from one's life. A fear of a bully takes away from one's emotional and possibly physical health. These are bad kinds of fears. But there are good kinds of fears. The fear of the Lord is, of course, the best. The fear of the Lord is more like a fear that you have when you're about to cross a busy road. And the fear reminds you to look both ways. It's a good fear, right? I've seen kids that don't have that fear. It's a bad thing not to have. Or when you're in the woods and you decide that maybe petting the large striped cat moving toward you would be a mistake. Are you happy that you have a little fear instilled somewhere in the back of your brain? It is a positive fear that comes from maturity and experience and adds good to one's being. The fear of the Lord helps us to understand our rightful and good place in the universe. God as our Father. And as a good Father, He is full of love. And yet, He disciplines, and we don't like that. He corrects, we don't like that. But it's done out of love. We all know it's a bad parent who lets their children do whatever they want. And undisciplined children do not fear, meaning they do not respect. They do not have any reverence for their earthly fathers. But in the end, it's the neglected children that scorn their earthly parents. So in our relationship, in your relationship as a child of God to your Father, you are asked to fear Him, not because He is cruel, but that He has right authority. And He expects us to learn to trust His authority as one trusts a good father who says, you know what, Billy? We're going to look both ways. You know what, Susie? We're not going to pet the stinky kitty in the woods. Right? Right? We trust our good Father and we respect His authority whether or not we fully understand everything He asks of us. Now, I don't want to belabor this point, but if we miss this, we miss the entire passage. We miss everything that's trying to be instilled in us from the book of Ecclesiastes today. We will fail to see God in a manner of respect and awe and even good fear. And we will live in a state of vanity, a state of Hebel and of passing things. And so starting again, we'll take the passage in two parts. We'll start in Ecclesiastes 5, look at verses 1 to 3. And it begins, "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools. For they do not know that they are doing evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words." So the teacher, he begins this section with a warning as we approach God. He warns us not to offer the sacrifice of fools. And what is the sacrifice of fools? Talk, talk, talk. You ever met a fool who won't be quiet? Oh, be honest. Come on, be honest. Talk, 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 but not listening. And we've all met someone who has a lot to say but says nothing. And we've all met a person who knows just a little about something, but claims they know everything. Everything. Just to impress. It's not exactly what the passage is talking about, but we'll call it a secondary application today. So what is it talking about? Well, we are told to quiet our hearts. And in verse 3, it speaks of dreams and business. And the location of that in verse 3 is near the fool's voice. So whatever that is about, it's almost certainly negative. Let's continue on. Now, I should mention, actually, before we continue, that in the Bible, a fool is not someone who is a clown. A fool is not someone who's a dummy. I'm choosing my words very carefully here. A fool is someone who might actually appear intelligent, but whose motives and means are dangerous and destructive to themselves and to others. Not criminal necessarily, but someone whose foolishness is deceptive and harmful. Let's see how the next few verses sort of connect everything. Look at verse 4, it'll be on the screen again for you. "When you vow a vow to God, do not delay in paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the works of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity. But God is the one you must fear." I want to read that verse again. Verse 7, I think, we'll tie everything together in just a few moments. "For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity." That word vanity we know means hebel. It means something that is passing away. It's a mist. It is here and gone. But in contrast to that, God is the one you must fear. Verse 7 speaks of dreams again, connecting it with increasing words and vanity and hebel and passing away. And so the foolish talk here is primarily about vows. And about vows we have to God, and vows of faith, and vows of responsibility under God. And that these dreams we might have, we might call them fantasies. That might be actually a better phrase. These fantasies we have, if we are not careful, they lead us down paths away from the fear of God, which is not what our culture tells us, of course, right? What does our culture tell us about our dreams, our fantasies, our hearts? Follow them, live them. Do what makes you happy. That's exactly what our culture tells us. But where vows are made, when your word is given, when we talk about things that are holy and good and from God, but all it is religious talk. All it is just talk. And there's no substance behind it. Well, not only do we make ourselves a liar, but we are using the things of God as a tool for our foolishness. You might ask, you know, Ecclesiastes might mean by all of this. What does this have to do with dreams? Well, to answer the first, whether you know it or not, we make most of our important vows before God. How many of you have made a special vow before God to someone else? Maybe you did it right here in this room. How many? Yeah, most of us have. You say vows. I don't make vows except for maybe the most important decisions of your life are vows, aren't they? Vows that are not just to each other, but vows before God. Vows unto God. Marital vows, infant or child dedication vows. How about your confession before you were baptized? Is that not a vow of some sort? Those are all vows. In all cases, you spoke, and you spoke before a group, and you spoke before God, and you're making an explicit promise. You made a special vow. But there are also implicit vows that we make. Tell someone you love them. Is that not an implicit vow of some sort? It's not the same as marriage. I'm not saying that. But tell someone you love them. Shake hands with somebody. It's not an explicit contract, but it does mean something implicitly. Call someone a friend. All of these are implicit promises that say one to another, I am going to treat you, value you, honor you in such and such a way. And they are not meant to be easily disregarded. They are holy. They are set apart for a purpose and for good. That's the definition of holy. They are before God. We have made these explicit or implicit vows. Or they are just words that we said because we wanted to get something from somebody. We wanted to get something from God. That's unholy on every level. Other times we have made very hasty vows. I swear to! To whom? Who do you swear to? Have you thought about what you're going to say next? To the creator of all things, how many times have we heard God used as a prop to back up a lie? Or, at most, a poorly thought out promise? And I don't think it's a stretch today that simply keeping your word, especially when it pertains to the things of God, is an important aspect of this passage. And if not this one, then I'll remind you of James chapter 5, verse 12. It's be on the screen again. But above all, my brothers, do not swear. Is a warning here, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath. But let your yes be and your no be, so that you might not fall under condemnation. You don't even have to say, I swear to. What you say, your word should be your bond. And I know I'm getting all old on you folks. Crazy things like not lying to people, right? One could translate all of this and say that too much talk plus vows only to be played as pseudo-religious games with people's emotions, with God's oversight, they will exact a heavier toll on the one who forgets to keep them than the one who struggles to fulfill them. That's the first piece. And aren't we all having a good time today? Now, what does this have to do with dreams? Well, I'm pretty sure this is saying that we need to put the fear of the Lord and our vows, our most important commitments, before we follow our dreams, before we follow our hearts, our desires, whether they are high and well-intended or whether they are crass. I was subjected this week to some crass dreams and desires and words. I was in a booth at a diner waiting to meet a friend I haven't seen in about 15 years. It was a good day, actually. And I'm in this booth and I'm waiting because he's driving up from Massachusetts. And I'm sitting and I have no intention to eavesdrop. That was not my intention. But the volume of these two men sitting next to me in the booth was just, I couldn't ignore it. It was so loud. And essentially, these two men, they were comparing notes about their encounters, you'll fill the blank in, with women at 20-something, their ambitions, their dreams, their hearts, their focus was solely on having more encounters with more women. And at least one of them now had a child with one of these women. And from what I gather, he didn't care much for mom or for the child. And yet, as I'm being tortured with two 20-something very whiny, crass men, when they're finally leaving and I was praising God every step they took, one began to complain to the other about his own father. His father was a military man who, for the sake of his own ambitions, didn't have any time for his family. And how much he resented him for it, failing to be there for him because he was off following his dream, oblivious to the own hypocrisy and his own failure, to his own commitment, because his ambitions, his heart's desires were, of course, of most importance. You see, this passage is not telling you to forget your dreams. Unless that's your dream, then just forget about it. It's not telling you to forget your dreams. It's not telling you to forget your ambitions or your hopes. It's telling you to weigh them. Weigh them. First, are they good? Or do they harm others and yourself? And then also weigh them, because even good dreams and ambitions and hopes, if are not carefully measured by the fear of the Lord, tend to take us down paths, take us to places where we are apt to very easily disregard our vows and our responsibilities, making our hearts and words become something unintended in pursuit of what might only be hebel, a very passing thing. Think about the modern phrase, I think Tim mentioned it, follow your heart. Follow your heart. I heard one comedian rightly point out that in a world where anything you feel about yourself should be reality, in a world where we all follow our hearts, I feel like there's an animated movie playing in the background. Everything will be fixed in 90 minutes. In a world where we follow our hearts, none of us would have finished elementary school. We would have all dropped out at 6 years old, become cowboys and princesses, right? Not my words, but I heard that and I go, yes, that's exactly right. I would have been an astronaut. Who needs training, right? When I grew up, I wanted to be a famous rock star. I did. I would jump in my trampoline and I'd go like this to air. I thought it was great. Of course, I didn't know how to play any instruments. You don't want to hear me sing. I could wake the dead, right? I wanted to be a football player when I was in middle school. I was pretty good at throwing the football and having, you know, somebody catch it in my backyard. I never went to practice, right? I never played for a team, but I wanted to follow my dream, the backyard fantasy dream. And if I followed those dreams blindly, I would have only been sadly a failure at life. I would also not be doing what God had actually called me to do. And we can laugh these things off as childhood fantasies because they are. Yet how many adults, how many grown men and women who are X years old, who should already know this, have seemed to miss the memo, right? How many adults have dreams that would only end in sorrow because they require them to disregard their commitments? What would this mean for the vows made to the Lord when he called you and I, when we confessed faith in him, and the vow we made when we entered the waters of baptism and claimed to have new life in him? When I first began to prepare for today, my initial thought was, well, we don't make vows today. We don't make many vows today like people used to, right? What does this mean for us? That's what I was thinking, but the more I studied and the more I prayed and the more I thought about vows and dreams and the fear of the Lord, the more I realized, actually, this passage has never been more relevant than today. You know why? Because in our time and in our place in history, there has never been another time or another place in history where people have had such means and such ability to chase after their dreams, whether they were from God or they were delusions. We live in a time and a place where people disregard family. People disregard marriage. People disregard church family. People disregard their commitment to Christ on a whim because of a feeling, because of an experience, because someone did something or said something I don't like, no matter how small. And so I'm done with them. I guess we're back to Matthew 18 from the beginning of the beginning of the month. I knew a man who left his family. You know, and as I'm thinking about it, I know three men who have left their family and took up with a younger woman because his wife was getting old. Just like him. And you know what? He went to follow his heart. And you know what? No one's surprised in this room. I mean, are you really surprised? Because you all know someone who has done, a man or a woman who's done something like that. We read novels, we watch movies that romanticize following one's heart at the expense of one's commitments and vows. And yet follow your heart is not found in Scripture, but Jeremiah 17:9 is. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? And I know, I sound like an old man, get off my lawn today. I know. And I almost retitled this message, When You Wish Upon a Star, You Might Be a Pagan. Oh, come on, that was a little funny. But Ecclesiastes is not a happy book. It's not a smiles book. It's not Philippians. It's not Revelation. You go, Revelation, you say, read the end, right? It's not a happy book. It comments on the reality before us, like it or not. It takes no prisoners. We are not immune from rubbing up against it. And it purposefully has rough edges. It wants to put us out of sorts. It wants to make you think, why did Pastor have to preach that today? Ecclesiastes wants you uncomfortable. Because when you're uncomfortable, you're listening. And the hardest thing about this is that in your heart of hearts, as deceitful as it is, you know it's onto something. It's not missing the mark here. I've seen this with people in ministry and position inside the church community turn something good to a fantasy and vanity because their heart wasn't centered on Christ. Their heart was centered on getting attention. Their heart was centered on this being a stepping stone to something else. Their heart was set on something other than Christ, because they forgot the fear of the Lord in their vows, both implicit and explicit. And again, it's not that we're being asked to throw out our dreams. It's not that we're being asked to throw out our ambitions. Please don't. Please have hopes. It's that we need to be careful. They do not give us the opportunity to speak one thing and then do another, breaking the most important commitments and vows that God has established in us. And it's not romantic. It's not modern. It's not fashionable. But what would you rather have? Let's be honest here. A model celebrity spouse or one who is faithful? What would you rather have? A church on the cutting edge of whatever culture you like, or one centered on Christ? A rock star pastor? You don't have one. Or one who shows up on Sunday? What would you rather have? And they're not mutually exclusive. I'm not saying that, you know, they're not, they never always not happen together. But if you had to choose one, well, I guess the same is expected of us. It's not fashionable. It's not modern. It's not romantic. Things like patience and faithfulness and kindness and self-control. And yet, those are four of the nine things that are said are the work or fruit of the Spirit working inside of us. Thank God. But they're not fashionable. Not the real ones. Not the holy ones. So friends, let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you can't be honest with your words, don't speak. Just don't. Don't. I have had uncomfortable conversations where somebody is saying things to me that I don't agree with. And I sit there and I'm polite and I say nothing because I can't agree. I can't affirm. Even in that situation when there's pressure on you, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Take the vows you make on your wedding day, on your baptismal day, on the day that you bring your little one up before us today. Well, not today. Take the vows you make when you call somebody friend, partner, when you say things like, I love you, I'm there for you, call me. Those are vows. They're not all equal, but they are saying to somebody else, I will honor you in such and such a way. Take those seriously and have hopes. And have dreams, and have ambitions, but let them fall under the guidance and authority of God and His Word. And if you are discontent with your vows and with your life and with your commitments and with whatever, maybe it's something around you that does need to change. But maybe, just maybe, When dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity, a chasing after things that don't last. And so let us not forget that God is the one we must fear in the end. And remember Solomon, and let's learn from him. He was the first one to have all of his wishes come true. And look what he wrote in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 10 and 11. Look what he wrote here. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure. My heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. And then I considered all that my hands had done and all the toil I had expended doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving against the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So today we're going to end in communion. And we're going to end in a simple prayer from Psalm 25:4. Make me know your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. I want to ask the deacons and assistant deacons if they would gather. For those online, we're going to say goodbye for now and hope to see you soon again. If you're able to come presently or online again. But please make sure you put your prayer requests in the comments.